Creatures Demon was Dutch, but yeah, half past 9 probably on time. I see that the NDPP is already in, so I think we could go SIU is here and the Hawks. So let's start promptly at 9:30. So Stone People, Ben, let me know when we are good to go. Shop, shop.
Goeiemôre. Good morning, Sanbonani. Molweni.
Good morning.
Ben, are we good to go? It is, okay, but I'm 30 seconds early. It's almost 12:30. Right. All right, colleagues, good morning. It is 12:30. We have a meeting this morning with the NPA in particular. I was in discussion with the NDPP and she brought to my attention
recording in progress
of the presentation, which would not be the purview or the competence of the NPA. And so we communicated with the Hawks and they are present this morning. So we will receive presentations in that regard from both the NPA and the Hawks. Largely the issue is that we need to see movement in investigations and prosecutions on the issues that we have raised. So NDPP, the issues that we had discussed, and thank you for that very comprehensive engagement that we had. I did communicate with the Hawks, and so they are here this morning so that we get the full picture of all the issues. So I'm not going to take too long, colleagues. I think let's get right into it. So that we can have time for engagement. And I know the House this afternoon is very busy as well. So on that note, let me welcome the SIU, NPA, Hawks, AG, National Treasury, and of course, colleagues and our team to the meeting this morning. And then, so we'll start with the NPA presentation and then we're gonna go to the Hawks. So I hope that is in order. So NDPP, over to you. Sister Ben, would please enter the apologies into the record as is usual for us. And let me hand over then to the NDPP.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you, Chair, as well as honorable members. And good morning to my colleagues online, General Libya at Sputnik TV, I see is online as well. Yanni, thank you. If you could start the presentation. Chair, I'm here today with Deputy National Director Advocate de Kock. Advocate Rabaji, the head of the AFU, is regrettably unwell, but she will be represented by her team. Advocate Andrea Johnson, who is the newly appointed investigating director, is also present on the platform and will be doing part of the presentation as well. I should say, Honorable Chair, that since we last were at before SCOPA exactly a month ago on the 15th of February, the NPA has had several new appointments, but in particular, we've had 8 women appointed to very senior leadership positions in the NPA, being 3 DPPs, Provincial Directors of Public Prosecutions, the Investigating Director, 2 Special DPPs, as well as 2 Chief Directors, being the heads of strategy as well as finance in the NPA. So this is a really exciting time for the NPA in that we are filling very key positions. And it will certainly make a difference in terms of our implementation of our strategy moving forward. Chair, Yanni, if we could please move to the first slide on the introduction. Chair, what I should perhaps say by way of introduction is that We have, I think we mentioned at the...
Sorry, yes. Before you proceed, I hope this is not the correct presentation flighted that we have on our screens. This is on TRC cases. You can get the right one.
Thank you for pointing that out, Jay. Sorry about this. We are before Parliament on Friday on the TRC matters.
Oh, no problem. No, fair enough. All right, let's get one for today. All right, so you can see it.
Right. Sorry, Jay. Sorry. Thank you for that. And don't make sure you don't flight the February presentation as well. We need the current one, the March one, Yanni, please. Yes, that's the correct one. If you could get it into slide, yes, that's great. Yes, thank you very much. If you could move to the first slide. So by way of introduction, Chair, you have the committee has specifically given us certain questions to answer, and we made a comprehensive presentation on the 15th of February, and I'm certainly not going to repeat what was mentioned then. For now, I think there are certain points that I would like to highlight at this stage. And we had mentioned this at the previous presentation, but to highlight that the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding between the SIU, the NPA, and the SAPS, in particular the DTCI, is hugely important so that we all have currently an SIU NPA MOU that was signed, I think, in 2017. But we've reviewed that, and in the process, we realized that because of the tripartite agreement, so to speak, because as we explained on the last occasion, cases that are referred to the NPA do not meet the criminal standard. And so the matters are in fact sent to the DPCI to investigate and then back to the NPA for decisions, that all three of us, all three entities needed to sign on to a single MOU so that we're very clear about the process. So you heard the last time that we are still waiting for our colleagues in the SAPS to come back to us. So hopefully we can finalize that, which will certainly help us in terms of the process. Because I think that's where some of the confusion arises and some of the things fall through the cracks. And talking about falling through the cracks, the other issue that we are working very closely, we are working on in the NPA, and of course, it will have to be with our colleagues in the DPCI and SIU. We are in the NPA working on a database to collect all of to get all of the referrals in one space and a common one so that between DPCI, ourselves, and the SIU, we all have a clear understanding and the same understanding of what cases are where and what levels of progress have been made, where matters are in the DPCI or in the NPA. There are discrepancies with regard to these figures in terms of what matters are, particularly, for example, with us for decision or in the investigation space. So we are working with our colleagues, in particular the DPCI, to ensure that we sanitize, well, not sanitize, that's the wrong word, that we actually make sure that we have all the correct figures to ensure that we're on the same page about which cases are where. That said, it's all part of you know, the really important collaboration that needs to happen between law enforcement agencies to make sure that these matters move with the speed, Chair, that you mentioned, we are all keen to see. Chair, there were very specific questions that were put to us, and they are on the screen. Number of cases withdrawn, reasons for that, cases enrolled, finalized matters, and sentences that have been handed down, and of course the reasons why some of the matters, cases are taking long in terms of investigation stage. This is where there's some discrepancy about how many cases are with the NPA. So we need to look at that, and we're trying to trace where the challenges are and cases where assets have been recovered. If we can move to the next slide, Yanni. So we explained on the last occasion, Chair, the legal framework that operates, and I'm not going to repeat this. I'm sure that members are well aware of this now, and we can certainly deal with that at question time if there's any need for clarity on this. Yanni, if we could move on to the next slide. So I think, this again highlights the in particular, the mandate and the framework that actually governs and guides the work of the SIU as well as the NPA. And again, I'm not going to go into the details. We can certainly deal with it in question time if there are any questions. And I think the next, I think Advocate de Kock, you will take over from now in terms of dealing specifically with the questions that have been raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, NDPP. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, members of the committee, Honourable members of the committee. Good morning to the colleagues of other law enforcement agencies. at the outset, I think that, as the NDPP indicated, the quest for us all in law enforcement is to enhance our collaboration with each other, and particularly in respect of important work that the SIU is doing and the referral of the criminal cases to the prosecution. This presentation, the following slides will set out what information we currently have within the MPA and our understanding of the work that has been referred to the MPA. Now, it's important to remember, colleagues and honourable members, that the work that is referred to the MPA nationally by the head of the SIU is then subsequently referred to the various divisions of the MPA in the country. And so there's a formal referral of the SIU referral, and there's a formal referral then to a director of public prosecutions who then engages with the specialized commercial crimes unit within that particular division. And then there is also a referral to the Directorate of Priority Crimes Investigations. Now, we have indicated before that this long-winded way of referring matters is at the heart of the challenge that we face with the management of the SIU investigations and prosecutions. And so the debate about the nature of the referral, the extent that evidence is sufficient within which to make a decision to prosecute or not to prosecute, the extent that further investigation is still required to make sure that there's sufficient evidence for the purposes of a criminal prosecution. The question of which suspects have been identified by the SIU and which suspects are subsequently identified in a broader investigation that is lodged or launched by the DPCI in collaboration with the prosecution team. So the methodology that we follow is that once a referral is received in a division, there needs to be a case management meeting with the DPCI investigator that's assigned and the prosecutor that's assigned, and then they jointly plan how best to take that matter forward. And as that matter progresses, this is where the issue of the different information in our respective spheres arise, because you will then find that the investigation may lead to other suspects, more charges, different charges, Or it may lead to a point where a decision is made that there isn't sufficient evidence to prosecute. And then, of course, a prosecutor, under the supervision of senior prosecutors in a particular office of the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit, will then make a decision not to prosecute. So I give the background so that there's a better understanding of the slide that we have presented to you now, Chairperson and Honourable Members. This was the information as at the end of February 2022. And this again, as I've indicated, according to the registers of the MPA. But I say at the outset, the information that we have before us may not necessarily coincide with the information contained by the SIU and the information contained by the DPCI. This is MPA management information. And so we recognize that there is the discrepancy, the potential for discrepancies. And in the previous slide, we indicated that the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation has been tasked to assist law enforcement, the SIU, the DPCI, the SAPS, and the prosecution in terms of the management of this information. And so I say at the outset that there are discrepancies, and the way forward will be the MOU that the NDPP spoke about, and of course the work that we are now doing with the assistance of the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. So let's go to the numbers. At February, that was the picture that we presented. We said there were 1,098 referrals in the MPA for investigation, and we indicated 253 referrals had been declined to prosecute. Furthermore, we said there were 41 matters in court, and we also at that point had 41 convictions. Other accused in court, 23, and there were J50 warrants for 8 matters. And at that point in time, we indicated there were 2 matters formally with the MPA for decision. And if I could just stop at this point, what happens with the bulk of the work between the DPCI and the MPA, not just in relation to SIU work, but also in relation to complex tax investigations, organized crime investigations, serious commercial crime investigations and other priority investigations, corruption in particular, with DPCI and the MPA. There's a constant movement of information between the MPA and the DPCI investigators. And so the question of when a decision is actually formally before us for decision is often the subject of a dispute. So I do understand that the DPCI will indicate that there are more decisions for referral with the MPA, but according to our registers, there's only 2 decisions currently formally with the MPA for decision. But that is something that we will, of course, explore further. So what happens is a prosecutor will issue instructions in relation to a particular investigation, and the investigating officer or officers tasked in the investigation are then expected to follow up on those instructions. And there's a to and fro on a particular docket between the investigators and the prosecution and the prosecutors. But currently we've indicated 2 referrals for decision. If we move to the next slide, as at the 10th of March, we see that there's a slight movement on the information that we have in our possession. The investigations outstanding or under investigation is now 1,087, and the decline to prosecute remains at 256, and in court 57, 41, 23, 3, and the decisions are 2. Interestingly, there are now only 2 J50 warrants as opposed to 8 in the previous slide. So within a month, we see that there is movement in terms of how the matters are being managed in our regions. If we can move to the next slide. Chairperson, we were asked to indicate the number of matters withdrawn. Now, a withdrawn matter is a matter that has already been enrolled on a court roll, and then subsequently a decision is made to withdraw a case. Now, in a SIU matter or a commercial matter, the chances are of a withdrawal is not as likely as in our general cases, simply because these matters are prepared for enrollment. So by the time we enroll and we make a decision to prosecute, the investigation of that case would have been largely completed. So the information that we have provided is the information relevant to our decisions not to prosecute, because that is the bulk of the information that we have relevant to the question of withdrawal, if we can talk about a broader definition of withdrawal. But I want to emphasize that when we decline to prosecute, what the prosecutor is saying is that there is not sufficient evidence to proceed with the prosecution. And based on the requirements in our law and the prosecution policy, prosecutors are under an obligation to evaluate the evidence after an investigation and to make an objective assessment whether there is sufficient evidence or whether there are a reasonable prospect of a successful prosecution in a particular case. So the information that we put up on the pie chart, you can move to the next slide, are the decisions not to prosecute. And we try and indicate on this pie chart what are the main reasons for our decisions not to prosecute. And there you have it. We've broken it down, and you see the bulk of the matters are insufficient evidence, which means that after an evaluation by a prosecutor, when the investigation had been completed by the DPCI, the prosecutor believed that there was not sufficient evidence to prove the criminal intent on behalf of a particular accused. So I think that's an important reflection that we need to understand as far as our decisions not to prosecute. So this slide just tries to give a snapshot of the years 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, and the number of declines to prosecute in each particular year. And that is the information at the high level. 2019, there were 49, 2020, 97, 2021, 72, and 2022, 3. Again, honorable members and chairperson, I emphasize that this is according to the information or the management information held by the prosecution in its books. So in order to elaborate a little bit on the question of the referral by the SIU and the investigation and the subsequent decision to prosecute or not to prosecute, we use in this example, we call it complexity of tracking, and we call it the first slide, number one. So in this example, and there's a description of the matter at the top, Noma Biza, number of referrals by SIU 4, suspects 4, there were Lolly decision 2, and in court 2, individual accused added 1, and corporate accused added 3. So already we now have 4 additional accused before the court, and our initial referral was only 4. And so in the narrative on the side of the slide, we indicate there were two of the referrals were declined to prosecute, 2 of the referrals were prosecution instituted, 1 additional accused added after the DPCI investigation, and 3 corporate entities added after the DPCI investigation. And the lessons from all of this is that proper criminal investigation required to ensure that there is no miscarriage of justice. In other words, you cannot just proceed immediately on the basis of the referral that we received, 1. And 2, the investigation may reveal more evidence, and the investigation will generally indicate that there are potentially more accused that should be added to a particular case. And of course, that is in the mandate of the prosecution. This is the prerogative of the prosecution. Our job is to ensure that the administration of justice is properly protected at all times, and that we enroll matters only when we believe there's a case. But we need to investigate the case holistically, and we cannot rush to court, because if we rush to court, we are not doing the work properly. And so although we will ensure that all of this needs to happen as fast as possible, we need to be able to do our work correctly in line with the law and the MPA Act. If we can move to the next slide. In this slide, we give another example of a referral by the SIU. So this referral was called Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, R405, Rankiesfontein. Proclamation number 1, Project 1. Matter 3, and number of referrals from this one proclamation were 51. The number of suspects were involved was 17. So again, we give an indication of the complexity of a referral. Although it's one proclamation, we can see the number of people that potentially may come to be suspects in a particular proclamation of the SIU. And that compounds the challenge that we have as the investigating authority and the prosecution in order to ensure that we can pull this together for the purposes of court. So on the next slide, we will provide some further details of this matter. So the proclamation refers to conduct between the 1st of January 2008 and the date of publication of the proclamation. The proclamation date was on date only on the 14th of February 2014. The report was received by the MPA on the September 2021. It contains 3 matters, or what we refer to as LEG, with 1 project code. And as we've indicated, amounting to 51 referrals, of which 3 referrals relate to particular firms, but same 17 accused in all 3 matters. So although there were 3 referrals, the same accused straddled all of those referrals. Still under investigation, so this is a matter that is still under investigation. The evidence goes back to 2008, and bear in mind the matter was referred to the MPA in September 2021, and also bear in mind that this matter then had to be referred to the DPCI for investigation in order that we can get a comprehensive understanding of any criminal misconduct. And then we say on average reports are received within 2 years after proclamation. That again is according to the information of the MPA. If we may move to the next slide. So Chairperson, I'm now on the question regarding the sentences, cases as far as sentences are concerned. Because of the short notice of the request for sentences, the information that we have is a sample of the information that we receive from our regions. We are still working to receive completely updated information regarding all the sentences based on the charges, the number of charges, and the actual sentences then imposed. So this is still work in progress, but out of the sample that we did receive, we have indicated, as per the two pie charts, how matters have been finalized in our courts. You will see on the right-hand side, the pie chart, the large proportion reflected in orange is imprisonment suspended. So this means this is where the court imposed direct imprisonment in relation to a particular conviction, and the court then suspended that imprisonment for a period. The blue is where we indicated the nature of a fine that has been imposed by the court. In this instance, we are counting fines of 5,000 and above, and we indicate in blue the fines that we have received. And often a fine is coupled with direct imprisonment. And then you will see the darker shade of blue is a suspended fine. And you will see 7.6% of the cases finalized, direct imprisonment of between 5 to 9 years were imposed. And then we also have on the slide direct imprisonment of 10 to 14 years, and direct imprisonment of 15 years and above. On the right-hand side of the slide, we indicate the custodial versus the non-custodial sentences for the purposes of the committee. If we may move to the next slide. So, Chairperson, just some closing remarks before I hand over to the NDPP and to the colleagues of the AFU. On sentencing, sentences passed by judicial officers in accordance to the offender, the offence, and the interest of the general society. Plea and sentence agreements are similarly considered by presiding officers to ensure proposed sentences are in line with the aforementioned considerations. The state may appeal against sentences imposed, but the Court of Appeal will only intervene where sentences imposed is considered to be shockingly inappropriate. In general, presentation is meant to explain the complexity of the referrals, the cases, and the investigations. Important to ensure that the effective dealing with referrals, investigations, and prosecution is done in a coordinated manner. And we have indicated that we recognize much more work must be done between ourselves, the SIU, and the DPCI, and the South African Police Service in terms of our collaboration. The interaction required between the SIU, the DPCI, and the MPA to monitor new referrals, investigations, and prosecutions. We are meeting quite regularly with our SIU counterparts to discuss the referrals. So there is a working relationship at an operational level between SIU, the DPCI, and the prosecution. The challenge, of course, is the management of the information. And so if we can get a much better understanding of all of this, we will be able to present a better and clearer picture regarding the progress in relation to each individual matter. So, Chairperson, I think from my side, that is all. Thank you very much, NDPP. That's my contribution for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Advocate Cock. Honourable Chair, the next one, actually, I made a mistake. It's not Advocate Johnston who will be presenting. It's Advocate Priya Beseswa who will be presenting. Advocate Rabaji, as I said, is regrettably not available. She's not well. So, Priya, over to you. You are unmuted, so you can go ahead. Thank you, NDPP Chair. The AFU was requested to present on the stats in respect of the number of freezing orders and confiscation orders. The AFU, we have looked at cases that have been referred by the SIU since 2002, including the matters that were referred to the Anti-Corruption Task Team, ACTT, and our figures are as shown on the screen. The number of confiscation forfeiture orders, that is final orders, are 48 to the value of 1.7 billion. Preservations, which are freezing orders, we have obtained preservation orders in 70 matters to the value of 4.1 billion to date. Next slide. Next slide, please. The next slide, please, Advocate Skitter. The next slide then speaks to...
Can we be assisted with movement? I know that, sorry for the interruption, we as members may have these, but because the meetings are public and there are journals online, it's helpful that they are able to keep up. So it's just in the key interest of transparency. I know we as members have them, so can we move with the presenter, please? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The correct slide is presented. The next slide speaks to the amount of payments that have been made to the criminal asset recovery account and payments to the victims. During the previous presentation, we did not break down the payments, but for the purposes of today, we have broke down the payments. We have recovered monies and property, may I say, in 28 cases. A total of 5.3 million rand was deposited in the criminal asset recovery account, and we have paid back 1.6 billion to victims since 2002. So the total recovery chair is 1.7 billion. And the next slide, please. So in closing, just a few remarks on behalf of the asset forfeiture unit. Many referrals from the SIU has no or very little asset forfeiture potential due to the SIU proceeding with civil recovery. So in other words, the money or the proceeds are recovered. The referral process, as discussed by my colleague Advocate de Kock, requires substantial additional criminal investigation when it is received by the SIU. This impacts on the asset forfeiture unit, bringing proceedings in terms of POCA for the recovery of proceeds. But just as a concluding remark, the SIU is a key stakeholder in a number of anti-corruption structures, such as the ACTT, Fusion Center, and the priority case review process. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, NDP. Thank you very much, Chair. Just finally to say that the DPME is now also, involved in looking at ensuring progress with regard to SIU referrals, probably given the fact that these are by way of presidential proclamations. They are looking at also developing some sort of coordination and monitoring mechanism with regard to the SIU referrals that are sent to the NPA and then onto the DPCI. We have certainly enhanced our internal monitoring processes, but as Advocate Cox said, we are not where we want to be or where we need to be. And a lot of work is going into this. Hopefully, the next time we present, we will be able to, in fact, give you even better statistics that will, ensure that we are aligned across the various entities, and that, we're all working off the same hymn sheet, so to speak. I'm going to leave it at that, Chair, and we stand ready to answer any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, NDPP and your team. But I'm going to, there's that slide, because I think that's the focused slide. The
The matter is as at the 11th of March. If we can just go to that one. Because I think this is where the DPCI needs to come in now.
Right, yes.
This one here. Right. So if my maths is correct, and I'm really hoping that it is, 1,087 cases under investigation by the DPCI. That's where our focus is. Because if I'm assuming that the other numbers flow out of that 10,087, but if not, then it's a different story. It would mean that only 35.3% of that 1087 is receiving attention insofar as process. But so I think DPCI, you are coming in on that particular one, on the 1087. So I just wanted to give that precursor to addressing us this morning, that movement on that 1087 is important for us, and we need to know where we are. So, General Lubea, good morning. And I hand over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm not sure if I'm audible.
Yes, Doctor, we can hear you, General, if you can.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Chairperson. I am accompanied in the this August forum by Major General Msibi, who is the head component really of the Serious Commercial Crime Investigation. My deputies out of the country and the 18 deputies, Major General Mubli is also the component head for Serious Corruption Investigation, is currently sitting at the Finance Committee of the Greater Service. So that's why I'm only accompanied by Major General Msibi. With regard to the slide that the chairperson is drawing our attention to on 1,087, if my understanding is correct, this number refers to the suspects and not the case dockets. Nevertheless, the investigation of the matters that we are reading maybe might be lower than that figure that is reflected. If the number of cases was to be 547, as I have seen in one of the slides of the MPA, which means that number may be referring to the number of suspects, not necessarily the dockets. So with regards to the dockets, indeed, the number is still high. We are working on this. It is part of the 21,000 dockets that we are currently handling as the DPCI, but maybe the area that may not have been reflecting correctly is, as the MVPP has indicated, is the matter that we have already referred to the MPA for decision. It will be higher than two, but it's a matter that we shall have to check our figures, as we believe that it is not less than 53. So that is the area that we may want to work on. But Honorable Chairperson and members, we are prioritizing these matters. We are working hard on them. And we believe that we will be able to overcome the challenges that delays, which is currently the number of hands that we are having to deal with these matters. So that, Chairperson, is what I can say. at this stage regarding the number of the cases that are currently under investigation as referred by the SIU. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, General. All right. I think every final point, colleagues, if I may, Advocate Ntibi, are there any comments on your side? And then, colleagues, please indicate on the platform if you wish to speak. I don't have the device that we usually use with me on hand right now. So please just indicate on the platform. But Advocate Ntibi, are there any comments on your side? And then, colleagues, will field questions.
Yes, Chair. Thank the Honourable Chair and the Honourable members of the committee for giving us the opportunity to sit in. Let me greet my colleague, the NDPP, and the head of the DPCI, and my colleagues that are in the meeting. Chair, we really would like to express a sense of gratitude at the attention that this matter is receiving. It can only serve all of us, in particular the public of South Africa that we serve, for this matter to be addressed and to be given appropriate attention. I say so, Chair, because at least since I started heading SIU in 2016 and we started with the new strategy, in 2017 already, there was a realization that for SIU to make an impact, all of its referrals have to be implemented and not exclusively referrals for prosecution. We refer to referrals for disciplinary action for consequence management and also speeding up the civil litigation. But of course, in this meeting, we look at the referrals for consideration by NPA. Of course, I think to use the word referrals for prosecution has a problematic connotation. But the referral to NPA for consideration. We started raising this matter, Chair, way back in 2017. And that is why we ultimately got into an MOU with NPA in 2017 already, so that we can all work together and collaborate to ensure that this matter receives attention. Because we had realized, and me in particular, I had realized with my colleagues that these matters, at least from the point of view of where we are, they were not receiving appropriate attention. And we were not seeing traction. And that is how we raised it as far back as then. And we do accept that these referrals are subject to the NPA processes. But by law, we are enjoined to refer as the legal framework was projected. We are enjoined to refer evidence that points to criminal action to NPA. Of course, from then on, they are subject to NPA processes. But as I say, we are pleased to see them now being attended to. And whether the outcome is as indicated in those slides, whether there's declining to prosecute, how many are prosecuted and so on. That is exactly what we wanted to see as far back as 2017, that these matters are being addressed and attended to. So that the efforts of this state entity SIU are not in futility, where matters have just been referred. I really wanted to make this this observation, Chair, and I really want to thank my colleague, the NDPP and the DPCI head, and of course the Honourable Committee, that this matter, that we see some traction. If you allow me, I'm joined by Dr. Wells, who is the Chief Legal Counsel, He's responsible, amongst others, to ensuring that the MOU that we have with MTA is attended to, where there are issues that are raised. We have also Mr. Maharaj, who's joining me, the Chief Program Portfolio Officer. He is responsible, amongst other functions, in ensuring that the proclamations are processed appropriately and the outcomes are followed up, including the reports that are sitting at the presidency. I'm also joined by Mr. Lakheto, the Chief National Investigating Officer. He's, of course, responsible for the investigations, and he's also part of the team from SIU that collaborates with NPA on the management or the monitoring of the MOU. I'm also joined by Mr. Kanyako, who's the spokesperson of SIU. We're also joined by Advocate Sisahi. Advocate Sisahi has been with SIU since its inception, and he may just make some few comments around some of the observations we have relating to this referral. And I say so simply because the SIU, Honorable Chair and Honorable Committee, is also mandated by law to investigate corruption, which is a criminal offence. I need to really underscore this. The law mandates SIU to investigate corruption, and it's a criminal offence. And thereby, then there is an expectation that SIU should investigate appropriately, of course, at the stage where there's evidence pointing to that criminal offence or any other criminal offence, and refer to NPA. So, our view in this regard, relating to some of the collaboration in the MOU, and without really repeating some of the outcomes, we would really want to go forward in the management of the MOU to ensure that there is an understanding of the outcomes, whether it's declining to prosecute, insufficient evidence, and all of that. That can possibly be a learning for us, so that we know where did we fall short, if we fell in any way. But in any case, Honourable Chair, I think there is a really enhanced collaboration process with the DPCI being brought in into the picture, and now when we make the referrals. Out of the discussions of the MOU implementation, we have said we refer matters at the same time to DPCI so that we can enhance the collaboration and assist with the outcome after the consideration by NPA. I just wanted to add on that and say the practical reality that has been shown in some of the slides, they really indicate that the extent to which we investigate and those referrals, and I'm really looking forward to this enhancement of the monitoring of the MOU, bringing in the DPME. We look forward to engaging with DPME, where they can really assist us to enhance our collaboration. So, Chair, on the last occasion, as I stepped down, on the last occasion, we did indicate that, you know, and without belaboring this meeting, Honourable Chair, that SIU in the past had a mandate from the NPA to prosecute some of the cases resulting from the large investigations they did. And Advocate Sisahi has got an institutional memory of that, and we would like to draw him into the MOU collaboration, where we can really enhance this collaboration, so that all of these observations, without going into really operational matters, so that they can be appropriately looked at. At this stage, let me just, Honourable Chair, with your permission, just 2 minutes or so, for Advocate Sitashi just to make the comment we have done. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you for the opportunity. Yes, indeed, and I don't want to repeat everything that our head has said, but as you know, the Act, SIU Empowering Act, says we must refer evidence pointing to the commission of an offence to the relevant prosecuting authority. Now, those are very soft words, you know. It doesn't go into detail of what we should be sending to the NPA, but quite understandably, we have embarked on a process, and that is confirmed in the MIU, in the MOU, that we not only refer, yes, we think there's an offence committed here to the NPA, we actually sent with it a portfolio of evidence. In other words, let's call it effectively a docket, which we believe proves the elements of the relevant offence. But once again, we are not the subject matter experts. The NPA are the subject matter experts when it comes to whether prosecution should be instituted, whether there are reasonable prospects of success in a prosecution. That final decision rests with the NPA. So it is quite understandable that there would be a significant number of instances where they would decline to prosecute, where they have looked at the evidence we've forwarded to them, but they are not satisfied that there are reasonable prospects of success, and therefore the table showing a number of matters where they decline to prosecute is perfectly understandable. I think the major difference between now and some years ago is that we were concerned, and I know the committee was concerned previously, that there's a huge number of referrals and it is not tracked what's happening to them and where they are going. Now we can see that process has been sorted out. Our referrals are being tracked. It's reported how many are still in the investigation phase, how many are declined to prosecute, how many are in court, how many have been completed, etc. At least there's traction now, and that is a feather in the cap for cooperation between the SIU and the NPA, how we are able to track these processes. Just on the issue of the portfolio of evidence, or if I can call it a SIU docket of evidence to prove the offence, in the SIU, of course, we do have a number of lawyers, including a number of people who have previously worked within the prosecuting in environment. I would be one of those. So we do some understanding of the elements of certain offences, and we know the complexity of some of the newer offences like racketeering and corruption in terms of PRECA and so forth. We try our best to include in those referrals all the evidence required. If it's not enough for a prosecution, we obviously will accept that, because it's the prerogative for the NPA to prosecute. It's not for us to decide. Our job is merely to comply with what our Act demands of us. The issue of SIU members doing prosecutions is something that dates back to the first decade of this century, when the SIU was dealing with a large number of matters, particularly in the social pensions, where we had a whole team of people within the SIU. We did thousands of prosecutions across the country on the strength of delegations from the Director of Public Prosecutions. So our team then was led by a retired Director of Public Prosecutions. I think he was still an Attorney General when he was in that position. And he had in five or six former prosecutors in the employ of the SIU who worked for him, and they traveled around the country doing those prosecutions on the strength of delegations received from the NPA, and it was very successful. they completed a large number of matters and obtained a large number of convictions. So there is a history of cooperation on that front as well, where SIU members prosecuted on the strength of a delegation from the NPA. So yeah, I was asked just to raise a few points, so I won't bore you with any further detail unless you need more information. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Advocate Sistafi. Honorable Chair, we really are thankful for this opportunity to make comments. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much to you, NDPP, General Lubea. I think on that very happy note of cooperation and things gaining traction, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say well done, Scope, for your constructive pressure on these matters to get them done. I will go out on that limb. Right. Babulet, let me hand over to you. I think, colleagues, so that questions don't get lost, let us take two colleagues at a time. I think we're doing well for time. So Honorable Lise and Honorable Yakov, and then we'll move in that fashion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You can see I'm sitting in my car because of the difficulty in getting flights this week, but that's another matter altogether. And thank you very much to the various presenters this morning. I think that as an overall picture, the work being done by the various agencies cannot be classified as in any way poor. And I really do want to say that I think that we should all be supportive of what work has been done. But having said that, Mr. Chairman, what South Africans are looking for is significant numbers of high-level successful prosecutions and convictions. And whilst it is really important to understand the processes that have to be followed and we accept that they do, the reality is we really aren't seeing the convictions, the successful prosecutions and convictions that are generally perceived by South Africans to be almost a fait accompli. And that's not to say that the proper processes mustn't be followed. So I really am concerned about that and the need. I know I've raised this a number of times in terms of budget constraints and resources, because it seems to me that if we're going to make the progress that we would like to see, and Mr. Chairman, you're quite right, we are doing our little bit with trying to coordinate, and even if everything's properly coordinated, I have my reservations that we will actually see the prosecutions and convictions. So I would really like the various agencies to without holding back, say what the resource constraints are to achieving the conviction. And I really do appreciate knowing the detail, or not the detail, but the overall picture of the processes that are required. And I'm in any way suggesting those should be changed. But if we're going to get the convictions we need, are there resources other than funding, which we all know is required? And then one naughty little question for General Abir. Mr. Chairman, he and I have been sparring about Steinhoff since 2017, and now we're talking about the slow pace of prosecution. Perhaps, General, you could tell me how you got with prosecuting anyone in the Steinhoff matter, but more particularly the fellow from Hermanus, Mr. Yuster. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you, Mr. Naughty List, with that naughty question. All right, Honorable Yako.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for indulging me, and thank you to the NPA for their presentation. I think I just have, I wanted to ask a question irrespective of the 1,087 cases, because the slide says data since 2014. So I'm wondering, is this the last span of cases? What is the longest last span of cases that you've had on your desk? And what are your targets in terms of the last span of cases on cases that you are working on, especially high profile cases? And this ties in with my next question, because I noticed that when we went to Department of Justice entities, we saw that a lot of cases that are being captured are paper-based. So you don't have an electronic way of keeping track with the cases, which then may hamper on sort of evidence that is being given and how much evidence that you've kept. And I think that actually informs my first question, which talks to how long are your cases, and then ties in with my last question, or my concern, is that you really don't have synergy, because you spoke about your sentences and it doesn't seem like it's a true reflection of what is actually happening in terms of sentences, which means that you don't have a proper synergy between your departments, as you said. And that worries me. If you don't have an electronic format of tracking your cases, making sure that each case is tracked and successfully prosecuted in a way that is satisfactory and can be accountable, and you can also stand by it. So I think, honestly, my main question, what is your digital system, and what are your measuring formats as to how you track a case? How long should a case be up and in the A4? For you to say that you had a successful prosecution of a case. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Lis and Honorable Yago. Let's get responses to those questions, and then we'll take the next batch of questions. So the leadership of the entities will answer as they deem fit across the spectrum of the issues that have been raised. I won't come in until all questions are answered, just to manage time.
If I may go ahead, Chair. So, Chair, I think what I should say is that, I agree with I think it was Honorable Lees who said, you know, we certainly, in a significant amount of high-profile cases, there's not enough that's coming through. And so, you know, one has to look at what are the challenges that law enforcement is having. I think we've got to have a really frank and candid discussion about challenges, and so that entities like parliamentary committees, like SCOPA, can actually help law enforcement in terms of ensuring that cases move quicker. So from the perspective of the NPA, and I'll leave General Labier to speak about the challenges that they may be having, because a lot of work is still in the investigation space. From the NPA side, of course, you know, there's been a lot of focus at the moment in terms of the resource constraints that the NPA was laboring under for many, many years until I took office in 2019. Very depleted organization. Since then, we have certainly had a lot of support, and we've been receiving funds, and I have Advocate Duplessis, who's online, who could talk a bit more about our resourcing. So from our perspective, of course, a lot of our efforts at the moment, certainly in the next 6 months, whilst the other work is continuing, because, you know, the NPA deals with murder, robberies, organized crime, a whole lot of other types of organized crime. This is really one slice of the work of the NPA that the NPA does. But what I want to say is that we have made requests for budget. We have been, Treasury has been very supportive. The minister has been very supportive. And we have certainly received a budget that, so from the NPA perspective, yes, for very specialized types of skills, we are still, you know, building that capacity. But certainly, you know, we have the capacity to deal with cases. And on this point, to mention what Mr. Fasahi, I think, mentioned from the SIU. That was, I recall some years ago, there was this initiative. I think it was when Willy Hofmeyer, who is from the NPA, was the head of the SIU. It may well be, I could be mistaken. And I think the DPP was Frank Khan, who was a Western Cape DPP that started to do this. I want to say that those cases were the very not complex cases, I recall, that very simple matters, which the NPA is very able to deal with because we have the capacity. And, you know, there is a single national prosecuting authority in this country, and it's important that the government gives the NPA the resources that it needs and requires to deal with these cases, so that also we can deal with it as it, in an objective manner, so you don't have an invest. So I think it's really important that to make the point that those were not the complex matters, which the NPA doesn't have a problem dealing with. It's the complex matters, which Mr. Lees talked about, that are the ones that are really giving us the challenges. And so from our perspective, it is about skills, but we are certainly working on that capacity, and we have the resources that we need in terms of the budget. But then it brings me nicely onto the question raised by Honorable Yako. You know, what is the lifespan of a case? It's very, very difficult to say, because it depends, of course, on the complexity of a case, and General Lubea can come in on this. And it also depends on the resources and whether you have the resources to ensure that investigations move speedily. And so depending on the complexity, a case could, you know, it's like asking a question, how long is a piece of string? But I agree, we cannot have cases, you know, that go on indefinitely. And we must try to ensure that even in the complex matters, we bring them to court as quickly as we can. The lack of digitization, which you raised, is definitely a challenge. And as I mentioned in my opening, we are looking at enhancing the capacity of the NPA to ensure that we have, you know, the electronic databases, and not just the NPA, that it cuts across, that all the entities are talking to this database, is assisting all of us, because that's the problem, is you have different databases, so everyone has different figures and they're just not talking to each other. And so, you know, the integrated justice system of the Department of Justice, you know, which is got some more momentum now, it certainly, you know, will help in this process. But in the meantime, we are trying to put together systems that our system, you're right, it's still largely paper-based. And so we're trying to put in place systems, electronic systems, to be able to deal with this. So I think those are the questions. And I just want to make one more comment before I allow my colleagues, just to say that one must remember that prior to 2019, you know, Advocate Motibi speaks about 2017 and the concern with cases not moving. One must remember that there was absolutely no will, political will in law enforcement to deal with these cases relating to corruption, high-level corruption. And so these cases were deliberately not being given any attention. Since 2019, there has been a focus on these cases. And so we are, together with the DPCI, our colleagues in the SIU, really trying to make impact, but also building the capabilities and capacities at the same time. So I think I'll leave it at that, Chair, and allow my colleagues to contribute. Thank you. Advocate de Kock, is there anything you want to add before we hand over?
I just want to add on the last point, in the PP, just to confirm and reaffirm that all our resources in the NPA is directed at our focus on corruption. Over the next 6 months, the NPA is ramping up its ability to deal with complex corruption. We are coordinating our work across all components within the NPA, including with the new head of the ID. And the collaboration between all our divisions through our directors of public prosecutions and the head of the ID will be strengthened. As far as the corruption and the commercial work is concerned, we have tasked the head, the special director of our commercial component, to immediately continue the fostering of the collaboration with the SIU head of investigation. We've indicated that they should meet at least once a month. We need to clean up the information that we have before us in terms of the data that we have, and we need to identify exactly which are the priority cases and which are the cases that we can call the so-called low-hanging fruit cases. We will continue with our process of dedicated capacity on these corruption matters, including dedicated capacity in the MPA to work with the SIU. So again, I think we are on track, honourable members and chairperson. I think we're going to enhance the way in which we do the work over the next 6 months, and I think the results will speak for itself. So that is our commitment that we do make, that the MPA is really going to focus very strongly on corruption. In the PPA, I saw an Advocate Du Plessis hand, so maybe you'd like to say something as well. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Advocate Du Plessis, please go ahead.
Thanks, NDPP. Thanks, Advocate De Kock. I think you captured it quite nicely, actually. I wanted to make the point about our six-month priorities and the sort of sharpened focus that we're going to have, not only within the NPA, but with our partners. But I do want to pick up something that our Minister of Justice said in Parliament last week. And it comes to this question of resources, where I think the Honourable Member said, it's not just about money. And I do want to make that point. It's not just about money. There's a massive shift in focus that's needed. One of the things that happened since our rebuilding efforts in 2019 that the NDPP speaks about is that we realized that those committing these kinds of crimes got a 10-year head start on us in many ways. And that means not a slight uptick in our pace is required, but a huge step up. You know, it's a sprint to catch up. We are confident we will catch up, but a lot of things have to happen to enable us to catch up. As I say, we did start on the back foot, and it's relatively, you know, 3 years is a relatively short time to be playing catch up. But one of the things we need to do is not just focus on money, but we need to be, as the Minister said in Parliament, bold and innovative in terms of how we bring the resources into the NPA and the criminal justice system. And that's not just about bringing resources in terms of money. It's about how we collaborate with the private sector. It's how we bring in the resources that are needed from the private sector without undermining our independence or our ability to prosecute these cases without fear and favor. It's about how do we create partnerships across the criminal justice system that bring much more efficiency and effectiveness to our efforts. That is where we require a bit of a mind shift change. And I think there's an opportunity right now in response to the Zonda reports, where Judge Zonda himself makes that point, that there needs to be a review of the legal structure and architecture that we currently operate in, with a very honest reflection on what's working and what's not. For example, the model of prosecution-led investigations. We need to have an in-depth discussion on how to or whether to amend the current legal framework within which we operate. And that is something which I know we'll be working on to make recommendations to the Minister and to the President. But it speaks to this bold and innovative response that's needed. If we think we're going to play catch-up after being 10 years behind without making those bold changes, I think. But as Advocate De Kock says, we at the NPA have introduced this into our priority focus, and we look forward to, at least by the end of this year, not only have moved forward on some of the cases that have been highlighted today, but really move forward with a fundamental mind shift that's required in terms of how the broader criminal justice system operates in relation to the nature of the crimes we face today. And let's not forget, the nature of the crimes and the complexity is not going to slow down. Increase of cyber technology and cyber crimes means we're going to have to keep pace even more in the future. So I think this comes at an important time. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Anton. Thank you, Honourable Chair. That's from the NPA for now.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. The question to the what has been run, that deals from the Honourable Mr. Lewis, that deals with the Steinhoff investigation. In that matter, although it was not part of the brief, but there have been developments with regards to the review or appeal of part of the matter that the Financial Sector Authority took to the tribunal. So based on that, there is still a view that the authorities dealing with the prosecution shall look at that. So initially, we believed that we would have moved in December, but based on that appeal, there is a review of the way forward. Otherwise, the mutual legal assistance is still being attended to. So that is where we are at this stage. With regard to the other matter that the NDPP has also noted that we may also come in, I need to indicate that as a point of departure from the DPC, we appreciate the collaboration with the other law enforcement agencies that we work with within the anti-corruption task team, also within the operational committee as approved by the lawmakers. So in that space, we work with the SIU. We will see when the SIU is conducting searches and the like. We will also be participating to support advocates with TV and the team. And when the OPA is dealing with the asset issues, we work closely with them. And when it comes to the investigation, we collaborate so that they guide the investigation as to whether everything that is needed for prosecution is already available in the docket, so that if not, we can deal with that. We have also noted, which I think we have indicated in the past, that we are working and building the capacity of the DPC. Already we have appointed in the field of forensic accounting investigation. We are building in that state. They are also busy doing the shortlisting of some of the posts that we have advertised in that space. And then we are moving away from the current 48% capacity that we are having in the DPCI. Obviously, with the realization of the COVID-19 that has slowed down the recruitment process, we believe that we will be moving a little bit quicker. Chairperson, we also need to be highlighting that we have also done duty arrangements so that 50 of our members can operate from the ID space in the NPA so that we can assist with the measures that the ID is doing. And then, unfortunately, we have also, in addition to that, lost 9 of our members who resigned to join the NPA. But that is usually the case when we are competing for limited resources. We have discussed with the NPA, which I think that they are considering that now that we have got the specialized prosecutors dealing with serious commercial crime cases, now that we also have got dedicated prosecutors that are dealing with serious organized crime, we also need dedicated capacity to deal with serious corruption investigations. That is where we have made proposal, and I think that the NPA is working on that. We believe that if we can also have that capacity, the matters of serious corruption will also move quicker than the current situation. I think that can also be attending to the question of the Honorable Government, that we also need to be seeing high-level prosecutions. If that capacity is there within the investigation and also with the prosecution, the matters can move quicker than we are currently seeing it. So that is the comment that I wish to bring in from the DPCI. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much. And your team, right? Honorable Hart Debe and Honorable Somya, in that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. All protocol observed. We welcome the report, Chair. I just want to follow up on what the NDPP has said, that prior 2019, there has been no political will and otherwise to prosecute these cases, Chair. While we also welcome the new appointments in the office, just want to get a sense at this current juncture, whether or not they've been able to clean their house, have they been able to change the culture, the mindset that existed prior 2019 in relation to prosecution, and if we were to measure the level of commitment to serve and to do the right thing in terms of prosecution, what would you say is the level at this current juncture? Whether or not, if that's the case, you still have within your director or those that had a laissez-faire attitude previously, and what are you dealing with such within your director? Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the report and the comments. In the first instance, I looked into whether I would refer the pyramid or the horizon as far as the arrangement of attending to these acts. One, in the primary instance, currently we're looking into the referrals by the SIU, how those are being attended to by the NPA. We might deal with all other related matters in terms of the fusion center per se, but the current instance deals specifically with the SIU referrals to the NPA. Then looking into the puzzle in terms of those referrals, you'd find out that why the SIU has got an independent role in terms of the civil matters which have come through their own investigations and deal with those in terms of their own prosecution line to recover some amounts and so forth. And then the referral will be made on the sticky criminal matters for prosecution specifically to the NPA, and without jumping the DPCI, which itself has got further investigatory capacity to deal with those matters which ought to be investigated further, as they are opposing some kind of gaps in terms of seriousness of the crime. To the NDPP, in terms of your system of accountability, when you appraise yourselves, you appraise your team, you appraise your structure, you appraise your performance, what could you place at the center of that appraiser, which would create a sense of comfort that indeed to manage the cases we are on track, and to arrive at a clear prosecutorial success or referral to court for such instances, whether they're acquittal or there is a successful prosecution, and your appraisal methodology, as you would see it, and appraise your functionaries, you appraise your system, you appraise your own standard of work. What are those critical areas which would say this is the focal point for such? Because in this instance, numbers don't lie. You look into the statistical reference of such matters, which are referral, and you look into between now and the time such referrals have been made, and you look into the level in terms of those metals which are still sticking with your system in terms of fulfillment. And what is it that we in the country, we should receive a sense of comfort in saying, no, this is appraisal method, is an appraisal method which shows a level of hope that things are somewhat happening in as far as these referrals are concerned. The last matter, if you take that and lead into what the SIU has said, that there's been a time when certain matters which have been successfully investigated by the SIU, which would have, in collaboration with yourselves and NPA, you would give them the right in terms of a delegation to deal with those matters up to the finalization in terms of prosecution. And what is it that stops you now in terms of dealing with those matters in that way? Because you have made a point, which I do respectively accept, that you're not only dealing with SIU referral matters. There are other serious crimes which your teams are dealing with and which you are focusing on. And therefore, if the state invests in these institutions and there is some form of capacity in these institutions, what is it that stops you to work through, you see, that line and see the success in terms of handling of these referred cases to yourself? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Babu Samuel and Honorable Hatebe. Let's get responses to those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the first issue that was raised by Honorable Hatebe, let me firstly say that in the past years, when there was, as I said, no commitment to deal with these matters, and of course I was referring specifically to these corruption matters that are investigated in the SIU space, but actually it's not restricted to that. I mean, we've seen what has emerged from the Zondo Commission. But what I would like to say is that during that period, it was a very small percentage of staff, particularly in leadership levels in the NPA, that didn't have the will to do these cases. The majority of the staff members in the NPA, and there's about 4,500 staff in the NPA, are really hardworking, dedicated prosecutors committed to bringing justice for the victims of crime. And so, you know, we've certainly, my assessment now is, in as much as there may be a small, very, very small percentage of staff members that we are still dealing with, and there are processes in place at the moment that will hopefully come to fruition fairly soon, I would say 99% of prosecutors in the NPA are dedicated to the cause of justice for the people of South Africa. And so, you know, we certainly have a good team that can move us forward as we try to turn the ship around. With regard to Honorable Somio's questions, in terms of the system of accountability that he asked for, that he inquires about, you're absolutely right, Honorable Somio. You know, we have to be razor-sharp focus in terms of what are the deliverables that, as you say, will give the people of South Africa the assurance that that we are on track, so to speak. So we had our planning session a couple of weeks back, and you know, a lot of work's been happening, going on for the past 3 years. But what we decided is that we're going to have systematic reviews in the NPA at three different levels. And these are going to happen firstly at the level of compliance with regard to our reporting to Parliament obligations.
Secondly, we are going to have review in terms of what we have, our six-month priorities. And so you will understand, Chair and Honourable Members, that in as much as a whole lot of work in terms of all the other crimes is still continuing, the priority focus for the next 6 months to start off with, and certainly will move for beyond that, is looking at implementation of the Zondo Commission recommendations. So we've put together a task force in the NPA in terms of coordination within the NPA and then with our partners. And there's a razor sharp focus on the next six months to start off with in terms of how do we implement Zondo Commission recommendations. How do we ensure, and together with our DPCI, who we are working closely with, together with the ID that has a very specific state capture mandate, our focus in the next 6 months is going to be implementation. And then there's going to be reports at reviews at this level at every MANCO and EXCO of the NPA in terms of progress on these matters. And the third level of review in the NPA will look at our more longer-term strategic objectives in terms of what we call is developing an IPAC organization, I for independence, P professional, A accountable, and C credible. So we have roadmaps that at the end of hopefully my term, we will be able to say this is what we've achieved to ensure that the NPA is truly an IPAC organization. So there's a whole lot of work streams that are working on that. So that's third level of review. So, and as we move forward, we will be signing performance contracts in April. All of the high-level priorities that we've identified will be reflected in the performance contracts of staff members. Performance contracts and performance management will mean something. And, of course, all of these priorities will be reflected in those performance contracts. And we will have and what is called an Enterprise Performance Review Committee in the NPA many years ago, which for various reasons stopped functioning. We've now resuscitated what we call the Organization Performance Review mechanism. And myself as the National Director, the focus for certainly the next 6 months moving forward to a year is specifically on state capture cases and performance in the NPA in terms of delivering on our priorities and holding staff members accountable. So that's on the second issue. On the third issue that was raised, I think it was also by Honorable Somio. What I really want to say, colleagues, is to start off with by saying that each institution has independent mandates. The NPA is a constitutional entity that has the mandate of prosecuting in South Africa. We must ensure that the NPA has all the resources that it has to prosecute cases, all cases, for the people of South Africa. So if, for example, one says, look, and we've had this, you know, there's been other SOEs want to say, look, let us prosecute these cases. There's very good reason why we have a single prosecuting authority. And that is to ensure that cases are dealt with in an objective and fair way. And so in as much as in the past, when the other initiative that we mentioned earlier on relating to the less serious issues that the SRU was dealing with was being handled by way of delegations, certainly in the NPA, we now have the capacity and we have good working relationships. In fact, what we should look at maybe with the SRU, and Advocate Motibi and I can perhaps talk about, is from an earlier stage to actually get prosecutors from the NPA more involved with the SIU, as we do with some of the with the DPCI in some of the more complex matters. But perhaps to get prosecutors, because those easy cases are very much district courts and maybe some regional court matters, but they can be dealt with very quickly at that level, to perhaps consider getting prosecutors, dedicated prosecutors in the NPA that work with the SIU at an early stages where these cases can be identified. And then we can actually move these cases through the system quickly. So that's perhaps something we can look at in terms of how we can fast track
those less serious cases, and Advocate Mutivi and I can perhaps have some conversations about that. But we certainly want to ensure that cases, the less complex cases or the simple cases as they were, as well as the, can move fast through the system. And in the more complex cases, of course, we'll take more time as we deal with those issues and try to get them trial ready. Thank you, Chair. I think I've dealt with all of the questions. My colleagues, I'm not sure. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure if there's any other comments from the DPCI or from any other members of the NPA. But let's go to yes. General De Beer, and then we will come back to NPA.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think that there was any specific question that was directed to the DPCI, unless if there is a specific one that needed to be coming in. Otherwise, we are comfortable. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yes, thanks, General. All right, NPA personnel?
Yes. I would just like to add to what the NDPP said on the dedicated capacity. So subsequent to that initiative that was referred to earlier, there was a management, a top leadership decision taken in the NPA, and this was round about 2007-2008, under the then NDPP advocate Busi Pikoli, that no prosecutor will be assigned to any institution to conduct prosecutions. Now, the question is, why was that decision taken? That decision was taken because it's in line with the Constitution, as the NDPP said, of a single prosecuting authority. But more importantly, prosecutions happen under the authority of directors of public prosecutions. And in order for us to hold our directors accountable for one, decision-making, two, acting within in the confines of the policy of the MPA, the policy that's been approved by Parliament, this is the main reason why you don't want to give prosecutors to any institution that just wants them. But what we are prepared to do, as the NDPP indicated, is to work very closely with all the priority areas, including the SIU. And so we invite the SIU to have this collaboration with us, that we are allowed to get involved quite closer in the investigation phase of the SIU matters with the DPCI. That is a model that's not new. We have offered this model, and this is the only way in which we are going to work it. And then we've got examples of working very closely with the tax authorities. The tax authorities don't have prosecutors, but they've got dedicated prosecutors within the NPA that are working very closely with the tax authorities. And so we've got various examples of that model. So I'm just imploring the committee to understand that it's not so simple just to say give prosecutors to any institution that wants it. That is going to be a recipe for disaster for this country. And so we will come back to this and say our approach is going to be enhance the capacity of the MPA to do its work. That's what we're doing now. We are getting more budget for resourcing. That's what we're doing now. And we will focus on the dedicated priorities, including the SIU work, going forward. Thank you very much, NDPP.
Thank you, General. I think there's a very keen understanding on the part of the committee on the individual mandates of the respective agencies in the law enforcement cluster. We quite keenly are, you know, clear on that particular aspect. And I think that more than any other heads of the units, the NDPP and the head of the Hawks know, and Advocate Mutivi, in fact, on our continued clarion call towards the pooling and sharing of resources in the conveyor belt of investigations to ensure successful prosecution. So that does not take away the independence, but in our view, enhances
the prospects of successful prosecutions and recoveries to the state, which are an important issue for us, because it's just the ransom sense that we want and the criminals behind bars. And of course, we are also keenly aware of the fact that the NPA is not just prosecuting the corrupt elements of society. It's got an array of issues it must deal with, as the NDPP was pointing out to. There's other matters which are out there, gender-based violence, the cash in transit heist, amongst others. All those ultimately from the various investigative spaces land on the desk of the NPA. So we're quite clear about that. But what is important here is to, one, give support to the law enforcement agencies and to ensure that the right things are done at an urgent speed and with the necessary conviction that they focus on all the various spaces. And so the issue of resources is very, very important in our view. But what we are expecting is that cases move with speed. I think that there must be no illusion about that, or any second guessing around that, that the issue of speed and urgency, of course, not compromising on the quality of the investigation, so that, and it's a bungled case, no. But it speaks to skills, expertise, knowledge, and capacity. That speed hinges on those things. And so I think that as we inch, closer and closer to a streamlined process, inch closer and closer to collaboration, that's what will satisfy the committee, that there is a maximum use of the minimum resources. So I think that is where we are, and that there is progress is a good thing. So I think I just wanted to go to the issue of the separation of responsibilities, powers, and functions on one hand, but also understanding we are one state, and so it's important that the state machinery works in sync with each other, and that silos are minimized to avoid duplication and wasteful and fruitless expenditure. If we had worked together, certain things would have moved at speed. Let me go to Honorable Lees and Honorable Song, right? Mazamba.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A great deal has been said, and a lot of positive stuff has been said, and so that is great. But I think the one thing that has been concerning me and hasn't really been addressed this morning is the question of the AFU's recoveries. The comment has been made that we sort of 10 years behind the curve, and that's absolutely right. But that 10 years has, there's an accumulated theft of money, pure and simple theft and corruption and fraud, which amounts to billions of rand. But the asset forfeiture unit is looking at what seems to you and I, if I had 1.5 billion, I think is the figure that's been recovered, but it might be another 4 billion. Now I'm forgetting the exact figure, but even if it's 5 billion, which would set me up for a relatively short period of my life left, is actually a small amount of the amount that has been stolen from the state and taxpayers. What, from the AFQ's point of view, are you satisfied with the amounts? And if not, to recover in accumulation?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm not sure if you got Honorable Lees at the tail end. He seemed to buffer, but if not, you will let us know. Babu Somyo?
Thank you very much. I appreciate the responses which have been told in by the NPA on the matter, but they're missing the point. They missed the point. You see, in the height of the pandemic, the president has created what has been termed the fusion center. And in that fusion center, a number of these institutions that relate in fighting crime and restoration of the ethical conduct generally in our society were brought together under one a roof as a symbolic instance. They work together knowing very well that I'm here, but I'm in the house of auditing the books, but I take matters, I refer them where they are supposed to go after the findings which have been made, and those referrals ought to be dealt with within that. There are more than 8,000 matters which were referred by the Auditor General into the fusion center. We're not talking about that. We're still talking about referrals to the NPA from the SIU in finalization of the reports, which the president yesterday, in appreciation of the work of the SIU, applauded their role in terms of their own success on those matters. Something which we must say, as a matter of urgency, find way of attending to those matters with speed. Let alone the fact that in the mail, there are going to be thrown other matters, as it is the case now. The Zondo Commission report is getting there with the myriad of such cases to be looked into. And you say, oh dear God, if we are in this pace now, what then is going to be the situation when there's that massive referral again to the same institution on the similar matters which would need some form of prosecution investigations? And if we appreciate the capacity that the state has generally in its own institutions, where there has been investment in terms of resource base, why can't we insist that the state must find a way of solidifying collaboration of these entities, even at the time when some of these things have been made a bit easier to follow? And therefore, the silo mentality, which is very strong in us, not going to assist the country. Yes, we appreciate the independence, we appreciate the fact that we've been given that right, but there are others who are working as part of that. Looking into the referral points, you see a case in terms of investigation finalized by SIU, getting into the NPA or further investigation, you see, to other institutions. And that itself eats into a duplication, which we would find in terms of the nature, you see, of such investigation. Yes, I appreciate the fact that you might want to say you have your prosecutors to be part of the SIU or any other structure in terms of what these matters, where they are referred to yourselves, would have come solidly with necessary documentation, necessary proof, and ready for the prosecution going forward. And that is going to be easy if we lose this fact of emphasis of your own. If you want to emphasize independence, you're not going to get collaboration from others. So this thing must not occupy your mind. What should occupy your mind is to how can you work together collaboratively with other institutions to ensure that we reach, you see, the actual need to reach society with such areas of magnificence. So, my view is a view which seeks to say, in whatever way, without say you lose your rights, because in any deputation delegations, there's no loss of rights, there's no loss of independence. Is what is there is that you say we're working together to try to realize this goal. Otherwise, come next year, this time, we're still going to be faced by the same numbers, I'm telling you. You know, if we're not going to improve our behavioral patterns around these matters, would only hold on our own independence on this matter. I'm afraid that's where we're going to be found to be come next year, this time around. The same thing is going to happen. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Let's get responses to that. And then I think, colleagues, we will bring it to an end after that. So NDPP and the head of Hawks and SIU, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Member, Honourable Somio. Let me start off by saying that I agree completely. We all law enforcement agencies, each one of us, in the context of our mandates, must work for the good of South Africa Incorporated. We have to work together. You know, in as the Chair said, the justice conveyor belt, that's what it is. But in that conveyor belt, looking at how can we actually collaborate for the benefit of the country to make sure that the country is the one that at the end, and the people of the country are the ones that are the beneficiaries of our collaborative efforts. That is critical. And so if there's any suggestion that the NPA wants to work in a silo, I want to please discount that immediately. In fact, barely a couple of weeks ago, and General Labia is on, and so is Advocate Mutibi, we actually insisted that there be a principals meeting of the fusion center, which to ensure that we're able to collaborate better. And that was a meeting that I called for because I felt that we needed to be collaborating better as law enforcement so that we actually support each other and each other's work and don't work with a silo mentality about what is good for the NPA or the DPCI or the SIU. Because if we work in that way, I agree, honorable members, it's the country is going to lose. And as the chair also said, so how do we actually collaborate for the benefit of the country? Ensuring that we utilize that we work, you know, within our mandates, that we utilize the skills that we have in each of our entities for the benefit of the country. And I think that is what we're actually trying to do in terms of having these collaborative meetings, because the fusion center is a very good concept on paper. It needs to work because all parties are committed to working with that spirit of collaboration. And I think that is what's critical. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in this space. We're certainly working hard at it. Certainly with the DPCI ourselves, there's a very, very high degree of collaboration. We work very, very closely on a number of cases. And, you know, there's regular meetings now, particularly with the focus on certain types of cases. And so I think we need to enhance that with the SIU as well so that, you know, things move through the conveyor belt a bit quicker and that we're able to bring cases to court. So I think, you know, we are completely on board, honorable members, that we cannot work with the silo mentality because the country will suffer. So how do we work to collaborate for the sake of the country? So I want to really make that very, very clear that there are gaps and we need to look very quickly. In fact, I think we have a meeting later this week with the Fusion Center colleagues to discuss the issue of collaboration and how we can make sure that we actually draw on the strengths of each of the entities for the benefit ultimately through prosecutions in cases and recovery of assets. So there was another question about asset recovery, and I agree, Honourable Lees, this is a small amount. If one looks at firstly, the, you know, how much of money the estimates of how much of money has been stolen from our country, it is, you know, it's been estimated at almost a third of our GDP. So I agree that this is a very, very small amount. So we've got asset recovery. There's two ways of, firstly, we're looking at in the context of this particular discussion, where we're only looking at cases that the referrals from the SIU to the NPA. And I certainly hope that our parliamentary, I want to put this into the mix, that when there's legislative amendments, that the SIU Act be amended for referrals from the SIU to actually go to the DPCI, and then we work with the DPCI. So, you know, that should be the easier process and the correct process, because the NPA is not the investigative, is not the investigative arm, so to speak. So if you look at asset recovery, getting back to that, you have asset recovery in the context of the SIU referrals, and there, as Advocate Bethesua indicated earlier on, a lot of these, the recoveries are done in the context of the SIU framework. And so by the time the matters come through to the NPA and the AFU, there's not much left. But if one looks at SA Inc. as a whole, at least there have been recoveries by the SIU at an earlier stage in terms of their legal framework. But if one looks at, you know, the universe of corruption generally, and so there's a lot of work that has been taking place in the NPA in terms of capacitating the asset forfeiture unit to deal with these matters, and in terms of we are looking at strategies. A lot of the money, it is estimated, has actually left the shores of South Africa. So we're looking at how mutual legal assistance with other countries, trying to trace assets. We're also looking at, we're exploring at this stage, we're still looking at the pros and cons of utilizing private sector. We've had offers from some private sector entities abroad to assist in asset recovery. There are pros and cons to this, so, you know, we're still exploring that, and, you know, I've spoken to the minister about it as well, but we will be very, very careful about, you know, how we tread in that terrain in terms of recovering money that has left the shores of South Africa. And then also to note that Chapter 5, that is asset recoveries that are asset forfeiture dependent on criminal convictions, particularly with the big complex matters, it's dependent on cases being finalized. And so therefore, the asset recovery processes are slower because, as I said, it's dependent on the criminal cases moving faster. But certainly within the NPA, the prosecutors are acutely aware of the fact that their work impacts on an asset recovery, and therefore trying to move the cases quicker through the system is a huge part of our efforts. But it must also be borne in mind that even when cases do come to court, that, you know, the delaying tactics of defense counsel also has a serious impact on the finalization of cases. So we are certainly, you know, in the NPA, we are, you know, we've looked at strategies to actually counter these delaying tactics. But at the end of the end, all we can do is really put up really, really strong arguments against it. But it's the judiciary that ultimately will decide. But all of that has an impact ultimately on the amount of assets that we recover. I'm not sure if Advocate Bethesua wants to add anything from the asset forfeiture unit. Priya, do you want to quickly add anything on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, NDPP and Chair. Just one aspect to add to it is the stats that were presented today, the amount of 1.7 billion that has been recovered is only in respect of matters that have been referred by the SIU and investigated by the DPCI. It does not represent the complete stats from the AFU. And as the NDPP very clearly stated, that there are very different processes in the asset forfeiture legislation that allows us to act. And very often we are dependent on the Chapter 5 matters, which encompass or require before criminal investigation to be conducted. Just a further point, regarding the referrals from the SIU, a very small percentage of those referrals actually result in asset forfeiture potential. Firstly, due to asset recovery already taking place in the SIU space. Secondly, the length of the time of the offence being committed and the referrals, which often leads to dissipation of assets. And also, at the stage where recoveries can happen, a very small percentage of the frozen assets actually translate to recoveries due to dissipation and the lowering of values of the assets. So just in conclusion, as I stated, the $1.7 billion represents the assets that have been recovered, the monies have been recovered solely from SIU referrals. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, NDP.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think we've covered all of the questions that have been raised.
Okay.
That's all from the end.
General, the way I see you coming on.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think that I appreciate the observation by the Honourable Chair regarding other matters that we are seized with. Indeed, it's not only the matters that have been referred by the SIA that we are seized with. There are both the CITs, police killings, drug traffickers, state capture investigation, the PPEs, and others. We are also focusing on municipalities that is taking also a big chunk of the work on them. Maybe coming to the observation by the Honorable Senior, we can't agree more with the view that as state agencies, there is a need to collaborate more. That there is no need for cyber operations while we are all independent with regard to our mandate. I highlighted on the issue of the state president pronouncing on the fusion center, which we are assured the people that implement that modality. I can indicate that we closely monitor the activities at the fusion center. I can say that as on the 11th of March this year, there were already 135 cases under investigation. And then with regard to court processes, there are 55 cases emanating from 19 related activities, 55 in court. 18 were already finalized in court with 17 convictions and one acquittal. The conviction rate is very high. Among the successes, we can say that they have registered the FIC in 23 accounts that they have frozen. It involved 272 million rands, while the AFU in 28 matters, they have recovered 278 million rands, while the SIU in 26 matters, they have recovered 465 million, while the SARS in 20 matters have recovered 727 million. So that's the area where there is cooperation, collaboration, as Honorable Sumir has indicated. So I support that view, and that is what we are trying to work very hard to ensure that we collaborate in all areas. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, colleagues. I think we will leave it at with the expressed understanding that, one, obviously collaboration is the name of the game, given
you know, constraints of resources, including but not limited to financial resources at this point in time. And of course, the prioritization of matters in itself is an indicator of the seriousness in which we have. Not that some matters are more important than others. They all are. But also, you see, prosecutions are a perception driver insofar as, you know, dealing with issues. And so one of the big things is that the prosecutions must fight at the highest levels of the political echelons of the country as and when it is necessary, which is all the time. Because the perception that big fish don't get prosecuted does not inspire confidence. In fact, it does the contrary. It invites a perception of political bias and political interference, when really we have got every duty to ensure the independence of the law enforcement agencies. So it must go well beyond the rhetoric and the statements of intent and the well wishes of anybody, but actually, practically, the prosecutions must be present and bite. I think what colleagues, we need to focus ourselves on is the fact that other law enforcement spaces, they themselves need to function in order for the NPA to function. And the other leg, which I think we need to confront, colleagues, yes, the judiciary is an independent, separate arm of the state, independent of parliament, as the legislature, and independent of the executive. But quite frankly, the courts are not helping if court dates, they themselves take 110,000 years in order for a matter to reach the law. I think a serious discussion has to be had with the judiciary about its own effectiveness and efficiency. It's totally unacceptable that cases are stuck on the roll for the longest of time, and that by the time they actually are heard, it's what I can only term a cosmetic prosecution, prosecuting for the sake of prosecuting without the real prospects of recoveries to the state, amongst others. So I think the independence of the judiciary in itself has got an obligation to adhere to certain terms and conditions of efficiency. This is just really in the collective interest of pushing back on the frontiers of corruption. Because I think if we overplay the independence card, we may run the risk of not asking the difficult questions and having the difficult conversations as a means to enhance and enable the process to be functional, effective, and efficient. So it's one area that we have to look at, so that you know, you're charged today and the matter is heard 3-4 years down the line. If it's a matter of capacity, then we must deal with that. Do we need more judges? Do we need more clerks in the courts and so on? Do we need more court buildings and so on? That's fine. Let's have that conversation to say, what is causing the bottlenecks which result in the delays? And then we have that. But we must not sit here comfortably and leave that part out of the equation. The courts need to play ball. So that's just the one aspect. And I think the final point to the law enforcement agencies, all support and any support has got terms and conditions on our part that you yourselves need to be functional and efficient. We can't be having the same conversations all the time and every time. The needle needs to move on progress and on dealing with the challenges. We want comprehensive investigations, the thorough investigations that result in watertight prosecutions. It's two sides of the same coin. And that's why I go back to the initial point then, that collaboration is the name of the game. So we support you conditionally, that you actually do the right things and achieve the right things. I think we will be well served if all the material aspects of the issues colleagues have raised gain, receive attention, and then we'll take it from there. I think, colleagues, we're making progress, and I think we'll have to have these meetings quarterly until such time that, you know, we are quite overly satisfied that things are actually moving in that regard. So we do not support you with a blank check. There are terms and conditions, and we are quite focused on the fact that investigations become fruitless and wasteful expenditure if they're not acted upon. We must not investigate just Jay. We must investigate so that the outcomes of the investigations result in consequence management for everyone. So let me give Mom Tolasha, and I think she'll have the last bite on this. Mom T, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good day to you. Chair, I'm quite excited with your closing remarks. Without undermining you, I just want to make a proposal that your closing remarks should be proposals that must be implemented. Remember, we raise issues between ourselves and the NPA insofar as the funding that might come elsewhere, and all those questions that were not so satisfied with their responses. I guess that all for me needs now the attention of the minister, for him to find time and we also create that space for him to come before us and take us through on these matters and pick up all that we've just made mention of, where the case sits forever in the role, they never come to the attention of the court. And we get to know what are the difficulties and how best can we work together to fast track that. Because for where I'm sitting here, as you're as you were correctly summarizing, it will not will be like people who did not do anything if we are unable to retrieve the taxpayers' money that has been misused. And we'll do so by making sure that people who are alleged are being taken through the correct process. So I want to concretely suggest that let there be time between us, yourself, and the committee. We have interaction with the minister so that he can take us through on difficulties, if there are any, and the progress, if there's any, and also how best can we work together in making sure that we deal with these matters that might be a problem, even if the NPA and all other entities have done their best. But if we cannot prosecute, then that becomes a problem. That is my suggestion, Chair. Thank you so much.
Well, I think, Montash, you are perfectly in order, and there's no undermining at all in terms of what you said. I think you are on the money on that one, and thank you for that. I think let's take it forward in this. We must actually still have a follow-up meeting with the Minister of Justice. You recall, colleagues, we met in 2020. There was issues around special courts and so on and so forth. There was issues around, you know, ensuring that there's additional prosecutors who were, you know, funded and recruited. So that has to happen. So I think, Montash, you are right. We will find time in our program, if not this term, early in the next term. And I think with the Office of the Chief Justice as well. Just on the issues of movement of cases as well, I think we need to have that discussion as well. I mean, if my view has always been, if money flows from the national fiscus and goes down to a municipal ward, then we've got every right as this committee to follow it to that point. And there's a budget allocated to the Office of the Chief Justice. It's not a budget with an open-ended reality to say, well, no, it's one which in itself must be accounted for in that space, and it must yield results. So, Ntolashe, you're right. I think we will take that forward, meeting with the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services and the Minister of Police around the capacity to investigate is concerned where necessary, and with the Office of the Chief Justice. I think it's one space we must venture in and just make sure that there's an understanding of the
gravity of the situation from all fronts. So I think that is fine, colleagues. I think the Stomp is alerting me to an announcement here. Just 1 second. Okay. Yeah. So I think we will leave it at that, colleagues. Mom Dolashe, you are quite right. All right. Let me thank the NDPP, the head of unit of the SIU, the head of the Hawks DPCI, and our colleagues from the AG and National Treasury who are with us this morning, as is per normal. And thank you very much for this interaction. We will, as I said, I think we'll be meeting quarterly so that we can just gauge movement on issues and unlock bottlenecks with the ask. So I think we will have our next engagement in the next quarter of parliament, end of June. End of June, I think, will be when we will meet again on these matters. It may also be timely in that the president would have submitted the implementation plan insofar as dealing with the PPE corruption, the Zondo Commission report as well. So it will be timely that we meet when that is actually fresh off the tray, out of the oven, and engage with it. And then, of course, colleagues, the meetings that have been suggested, we will find time to deal with those. So for now, we are cautiously satisfied with the progress and we'll continue to gauge it. I think what we can take out of this is that there is movement in collaboration, and I think that is important. And that's something we've always wanted. Obviously, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And I always say the right step in the right direction is always very, very important, because you may be moving, but if it's not steps in the right direction, big problem. So I think, so we are quite happy with that, colleagues. Thank you very much. Just 2 announcements from our side. Tomorrow, we're dealing with reports and minutes. There's been a revision to our ESCOM oversight, which is week long, because the motion of no confidence in the president and the cabinet will sit on the same day, which is the 30th of March. So we've had to reconfigure our program a little bit, and all of us will be attending that sitting virtually because we'll be on oversight, but the program is being adjusted to make provision for the committee to be in full attendance on that. It will be a three-line whip sitting. So once that has been finalized, we are in touch with the House Chair. The revised program will reach his desk by probably 2 o'clock. So we will be going to ESCOM along those lines. So it's just those 2 things. Otherwise, colleagues, Zumangazo Zosbeni, thank you very much, and have a good day further and a good week ahead. Take care and God bless.
Which side are you?
I'm Tim Stopper.
No, I'm going to take you in the area where there's no connection.
Oh. No, I'm trying.
An honorable police. An enclosure where you won't find any space.
Hi, Shalele Tembe, New Tembe, the Apilis.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.